those highs will always lead to a low and the low will always lead to a high. The way I keep on pushing forward and keep on being hungry is even when I'm in those lows, it snaps you back into, I don't know how long this low is going to be, but there's a high on the other end. Just keep on chasing that, knowing that it's just part of the journey. As soon as I get out here on the outskirts, I wish I was down in by your house first. Something about a summer in the south shore shines like gold down these old Brown Bear River Valley Brown.
Welcome everybody to Nashville Drummers Podcast, episode 44.
We're super excited to welcome, we believe, our first Nashville native to the podcast, none other than Luke Sumner. Luke is just a total professional. I really enjoyed hearing his experiences and his really valuable advice on, he kept coming back to being a pro and doing things the right way. And we kind of probed him for what he meant by that. And I thought he gave some really stellar tactical examples and advice, especially for younger drummers, on how to do things the right way, how to have the right mindset to continue to be hired and be valuable to those around you.
Luke is a dude who I immediately liked upon meeting him and talking to him. We actually met at a rehearsal room. He was just hanging out outside. We just started yakking. But he had a lot of great points. I really enjoyed talking to him. Complete sweetheart. And he's one of those guys that we had to reschedule like 10 times just because our schedules were just not lining up. But glad we finally made it work.
We hope you enjoy episode 44 featuring Luke Sumner. And just a quick reminder that you can now buy official Nashville Drummers Podcast merch over at the new Drum Supply. So go check out Andy at the new shop. He's got a lot more space and a lot more gear, and you can pick up some merch while you're there.
Not the same as it ever was. Sonique Drums is the fledgling but fierce drum and percussion manufacturer based out of the Pinery, Colorado. They started their first year in business swinging and continue to punch up at the percussion industry at large. Sonique Drums is designing and manufacturing new, innovative, and better-made percussion accessories like the NATO 1, an industry-first, continually adjustable throw-off, or another industry-first, the 12-point drum key. Sonique Drums also specializes in steam-bent snare drums, using domestic and exotic tone woods equipped with all brass hardware. You can demo and buy Sonique Drums, original accessories, and snares in Nashville at Nelson Drum Shop, or meet them in person at the Music City Drum Show in July. Check them out at soniquedrums.com. What are some of your favorites?
Dude, like sketch comedy-wise, Key & Peele came out like right when I was in high school.
Nice.
And so that was just...
prime.
Prime. Because, yeah. I mean, with the substitute teacher bit, my sister's name is Jacqueline, so the Jay Quellen thing was just perfect.
For me, with them, it's all about East-West College Bowl.
Oh, dude. All the names.
All of the names, bro. Like, Sequester Gunderplinth. Like, that, just that name destroyed me when he said it.
Well, you know it's just like dudes sitting in a room and just saying just nonsense names.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, dude.
And they pick the best ones. Like, they're like, let's just do this for a few hours until we're just laughing so hard at these names.
And the makeup and hairstyles to go along with it.
Oh, my God.
Like, some of the sideburns where it's, like, just chiseled in.
God. That last one. Yeah, that.
It's so good.
Oh, yeah. Dude, great times. Anyway, dude.
Anyway.
Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So glad to finally have you. We interviewed you at the drum show, and
yeah,
just wasn't enough. We needed more Luke in our life.
Just a little bit more.
Yeah.
We've come a long way in our relationship.
Such a long way.
From meeting in the hallway of a rehearsal space.
Yes.
To interviewing in a small room inside of a rehearsal space.
Outside the hallway.
Yeah.
It's really full circle.
Yep.
When you really think about it.
Yeah. And this is where the relationship ends. After this, we can't speak to each other.
Ever again.
10 years at least.
Ever again. It's just over.
Yeah.
Well, normally we would start by asking our guests, you know, where you're from, your journey to Nashville. But we have a Nashville native with us. Is that right?
Yep. Yeah, born and raised.
So I'm not going to ask you when you moved to Nashville then.
The joke I always say is like, I met someone the other night and they're like, how long you been in town? I was like, 28 years. And they like, just like kind of this glazed over look. And I was like, I was born here. Yeah, and they're like, oh.
When you see them start, you see their.
They're like, man,
that'd be crossing. Way older than I thought.
Like no. Some like, are you like in your 40s or something? And I was like, no.
No, I didn't choose to come here. I just chose to stay.
I just appeared.
Yeah. I continue to choose to stay. Which is actually a sentiment that is appreciated. I've run into some, I'll call them just bitter natives, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, everything's changed and I hate all these newcomers. And maybe you do feel, maybe, how do you feel about all the changes?
Before we assume he's not a bitter.
I'm not a bitter native. Okay. I do know bitter natives.
You don't seem like one.
Mine is more, the only thing I get like really, I guess skeptical is the word, is when they start like taking away things that make Nashville, mm-hmm. like tearing down studios or like venues. I'm like when the whole like exit in thing happened.
Yeah.
It's like, that's like what makes this town. Like all the people who've played through there and like cut their teeth in that club. Like it's like tearing down the End or tearing down the Ryman. Like,
yeah.
Same thing in my book.
The End, man.
The End.
Anybody know the dude's name that owns that old guy?
Somebody does.
Someone does.
But
I probably should.
Yeah.
I'm just going to go ahead and say this. He's the most unfriendly person I've ever met.
I don't think I've ever met him.
Yeah, like, how is that place still in business?
Because
I don't know about you guys.
No.
I've both been there and played there.
It's the dirtiest rock club you've ever been in.
I've been there where I played in front of like three, like basically the other artists, but I've also been to sellout crowds. I'm like, how is it that?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it really does speak to, you know, the artists have to promote the shows and stuff.
But. Yes. I've been to way more shows there when it's like, five people.
Yeah, I feel like that's more common, but I'm always just like, what is this place?
And the band walks out, they're like, hey! And just the energy just completely dies.
Yeah.
I like the vibe, and there's at least one Nashville Drummers podcast sticker.
Is there?
So.
Yeah. And is that because of you?
It is because of me.
Okay. I always like it when it's not, but you know.
Yeah.
It feels good to see those just popping up randomly. All of you who just put up our stickers in random places, even if it's a urinal.
I was going to say, why are they all in urinals? Maybe they're trying to tell us something. The show is piss.
Your show belongs here in front of my wiener.
Is it like in front of the urinal or on the urinal?
Honestly, I'm not picky. I'll take wherever. If you're going to put us up there, I'm
front
you might
center.
Be doing it as a way to insult us, but I'm going to turn that hate into power. that's just what I do. Judo, baby.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. Well, so you born and raised in Nashville. Yeah. Tell us still just your journey. I mean, did you come from a musical family? Was it drums or nothing early on?
Yeah. So I grew up here. A lot of my family are creatives. You know, my family's kind of been in town since really the 40s.
Damn.
So my dad's a native too. And my dad played drums. And growing up, you know, from like age two, I mean, even when I was younger, I was always banging on pots and pans, and it was never discouraged. It was always encouraged. And my dad works in the music industry as a graphic designer.
Oh, cool.
So I was kind of always around it to some extent, just, you know, from a young age, getting to go to like cool shows. And, you know, we'd get backstage passes on tours just to see his artwork and see what kind of stuff he got to do. So I got really good exposure really early on.
Do you remember like the first venue or the first like big show in town that you went to maybe with your dad?
So the first big show I went to that I remember, because my dad worked in a lot of CCM stuff, is Stephen Curtis Chapman.
Wow.
Yeah. Headlining at Starwood Amphitheater, which isn't even around anymore.
Whoa.
Yeah, where is that? Where was that?
So if I remember correctly, it's kind of closer to Mount Juliet.
Okay.
But it was like the original amphitheater. And my dad's always talked about like seeing like Kenny Loggins and, you know, just crazy acts out there. But I remember going to that show, and my dad plays drums too. And from just an early age, like I got such a healthy diet of music. Because, you know, being in Nashville, country is always
a given.
A given.
Yeah.
And I kind of, I had a weird relationship with it. I didn't really dive into it until after high school or mid high school. But growing up, I listened to a ton of like 70s and 80s and like heavy metal, like not heavy metal, but more like hair metal, kind of like Van Halen, yeah, that kind of stuff. And then like on top of that, you know, Michael McDonald and Kenny Loggins and just like really good like 70s like R&B. And I remember when I was in high school, like my dad had this massive shelf with CDs. And like before I would go to school, like before he got up to his office, I would like go up there and like snag a couple CDs and listen to them all week. And then I'd take them back up there the next week and like exchange them out. So I listened to so much just good music.
Yeah.
And I think it really just rounded my playing out. Yeah, I think I didn't realize at the time how much the music you listen to when you're a kid like affects
massively.
And you know, like you have that, and then I think, you know, our generation's super different from other generations before us because we're kind of like the first iPod generation.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't have an iPod, and you know, I'm just a kid who lived in the suburbs. And I remember getting on like the bus in middle school and someone like handed me an iPod and it had like rap music on it. And I was like, what is this? And, you know, and then like just some heavy rock stuff and like more popular stuff. And even early on, like I was, cause mainly like elementary school, all that stuff, I was obsessed. I wasn't obsessed with any like current music.
Yeah.
I think the most current I listened to was like CMT, like stuff that was on CMT just in the house because I had a massive crush on Shania Twain. And so I was like, anytime that song was on, I was like, yes.
Like, Dad, I just really like the rhythmic motifs. I just need to watch it one more time.
Well, yeah. Yeah, it's all about the rhythm.
Yeah.
But
yeah, it is.
But just like, yeah, I think I was very lucky to get such a like healthy diet of music. And, you know, and as far as playing, I played in church a ton.
Was that where the drums kind of started for you?
Kind of. Like I started playing drum set really early. I mean, I got one for Christmas when I was two.
First kit?
First kit. It? CB.
Yeah, dude, baby.
Wait, what color? What finish?
White.
Okay.
White
Mine CB. Was a CB wine red.
But it was like a miniature CB. Like it wasn't even like a CB 700. It was like Kmart CB.
Yeah.
You know what CB stands for?
No.
Crappy best.
It wasn't.
This episode's sponsored by CB drums.
Are they even still around?
I don't think so. I haven't seen a kit like that.
But everyone has a CB story.
Dude, yeah.
Yeah. And you know, Pearl used to make a lot of those
really
kits.
Really?
Like those off-brand. Yeah, we discussed
that's
that
right,
before.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
It's just come up many times. Because we always ask people their first kit. And it oftentimes is a Pearl.
That information deletes itself from my brain every time I hear it. Like 10 seconds later, I'm like,
yeah, right.
That's great to hear.
That's crazy. That's just awesome.
Crappy best.
But yeah, I got into like school band when I was in middle school and did, you know, classical percussion all through middle school, high school, college. But yeah, church definitely played like a massive part in my kit playing.
When you were playing in church, was that mostly like CCM style stuff?
Yeah. Yeah, it was mainly like worship stuff. There's a guy that came to my church because I grew up in Franklin. And there's a guy that came to my church. His name is Alexis Cruz. And he came when I was in sixth grade. Just to start youth bands.
Wow.
Because he was like, there's no sense in having, you know, college kids lead middle schoolers and high schoolers. Like, let's lead ourselves. And, you know, it being Music City, I think we had enough kids to like well staff like four or five bands in each grade or in each like high school and middle school. Mm-hmm. So, but there weren't, for whatever reason, a ton of drummers. So I was playing for like three different groups. So like all these groups were alternating and I was playing like every Sunday or every Wednesday. But that he really like from early on in that, like we're playing to a click. You're gonna play to a click, you're gonna play on ears.
Wow.
And really
that is so cool, man.
Yeah. It because especially like the last couple years, I've heard horror stories or met guys who are like, oh, I don't play to a click or I don't know how to play to a click. I'm like, and you know, and then later on as you know, I got to play in like the main service and stuff, playing the tracks, and I didn't realize like how useful that was going to be later on in my career, mm-hmm. just because, I mean, you kind of have to be able to do that.
Yeah.
Like it's
yeah, if you can't play to a click, you know, we're trying to do play professionally. I mean, forget about it.
Yeah.
Or record. I mean, that's like,
and it's not even
comes with the definition of being a drummer.
Yeah. Know? And it's not even playing to a click as much as playing to a click and making it feel good. Because it's one thing to play to, like anyone can, you know, clap their hands to a click, but having pocket with a click.
I mean,
that's a discussion.
I don't even think everyone can do that.
No.
I mean, you can if you work at it, but
yes.
I know plenty of people who would be like, I don't know. I keep thinking it's going to be faster than it is. Like, it's never going to get faster.
Dude,
it's
one,
a metronome.
One of the things
it
that
is right.
That for whatever reason clicked in my head was that was good.
I'll sample that sound effect. No,
just put it on a sample pad.
Yeah.
Is when I was in marching band, one of my instructors who works at Forks, and I've known him literally since I was an infant. Like, my dad used to take me and sit me on the counter at Forks while he rolled sticks.
Gosh.
But his name's Alan Rice.
Yeah, no, Alan.
Alan's great. And so he taught me in high school in drumline, and I remember, and for whatever reason, it's just stuck in my head, and I use it way more than I thought I would, is he's would have, like, you know, good old Dr. Beat just, like, slamming.
Yeah.
And you're trying to get your feet in time with your hands and all that stuff, and he's like, don't think about your feet trying to catch up with the click. Think of it as your feet are what is making the click happen.
Yeah.
And so, like, having that mindset and being more like, kind of like the click is following you, not you're following the click.
Right.
Or y'all are doing it together. It's not, it's more of a team effort.
Exactly.
Than,
it's, you
than
have, you
two
have a partnership with this
yes.
thing. It's not, yeah, that's the thing. Like, thinking, I'm like, trying not to mess up. Like, if you're, they say that about everything. Like, if you're learning sword play or you're learning how to use a gun or whatever, you're like, it's always like making an extension of yourself. And it's not any different with a metronome.
Yeah.
Like, that should feel like that's...
It's second nature.
Right. It's part of me.
Yeah.
That's, as soon as you're like, oh, well, it's me versus the click, or I just can't beat this thing. Well, you've already lost. You have to change that whole mindset. Like,
well,
you said, and work with it.
Before too long, you get to the point where, I mean, I'm sure for all three of us, you played two counts on a metronome and we're locked in.
Yeah.
Like, we're fine.
Yeah.
And it's, I don't think I could understand not being able to do that.
Which is a weird feeling when you go back and teach.
I haven't tried to teach. Actually, no, I take that back. I did one lesson for a kid whose parents were like, he's really interested, and he was not really interested.
We're really interested in him becoming interested.
Yeah.
Well, he's not yet, though.
And so I remember, like, going in there and being like, all right, let's do, like, a right. And, like, I, like, just turned on the metronome, and it was, like, swing and a miss.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I forgot this isn't, like, a natural thing that everyone has.
Yeah,
it's not.
So
it's easy. That the one that got me early when I started doing some more, just when I had a few students when I was younger, was teaching double strokes. I was like, oh yeah, how did I learn this?
You're like, oh,
like,
yeah.
I'm like, you need to understand and control the bounce. I'm like, well,
you're like, what's just, a bounce?
When you
like,
start to unpack it,
know what? It's actually been so long since I actually consciously thought about this thing.
Yeah. You're like, keep your fulcrum intact.
Yeah, I'm like.
And they're like, what's a fulcrum?
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Let's break down stick.
All right. So this, yeah, exactly. Well, this is a drumstick. It's made of wood, hopefully.
Like, wait, is it?
No, because then you had those students that show up with, like, the plastic light-up ones.
Oh, no.
Yeah, those are the trouble ones.
Listen, go home and
set those on fire.
Well, you need me to go get some more other sticks? Well, I need you to go home and I need you to just... where are your parents usually when you get home? Oh, they're usually in the living room. Oh, great. Okay. Both of them usually there? Yeah. Okay, so then you can hit them both in the face at the same time.
And they light up.
And then say, get me some real drumsticks, Mom and Pop. please.
Nate always does these great situations.
I know,
I don't even know what you call it. Like little skits where you're pretending to be some character and we go with
that. That needs to be like another side hustle is like drums, yeah. like music skits.
Oh. Well,
that's like this podcast.
And the styling of Eric Andre.
I'm just going to say this right now, and if anyone tries to steal this idea, I will beat you to within an inch of your life.
He always looks at the camera.
It's like you. Yeah,
yeah. So, the gear loading Olympics.
Oh, man.
Imagine, like it's like a Tough Mudder type thing, only like instead of rucking or whatever with a big backpack, let's say you have to like carry a big keyboard case, heavy, and up like flights of stairs.
A Himsenberg snare like, case or a 22-inch kick case.
Honestly, I feel like it could work here in Nashville.
Yes.
I'm going to ask right now, what do you think? Is this a good idea or am I an idiot or both?
Just like scratch the keyboard case. You just have to carry around like 90s Pearl hardware.
Oh.
Yeah, like with the cymbal weight on the back of it.
Yes. Oh, that'll do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's the great part about all of that is it's such a wonky carry.
Oh yeah.
Which makes it's more than just
uncomfortable.
Heavy. It's uncomfortable and awkward and yeah, that would be. I want to come up with like 10 events that would actually be challenging and get, you know, at least 5 or 6 people to partake in each one. I feel like that would actually pop off.
Like someone would definitely like throw out a back or something.
Yeah,
like someone would be injured.
Yeah. I mean, there'll be waivers for sure.
there will be injuries. There will be careers that are ended.
Exactly, yeah, we got to turn the fat somehow. You know.
Yeah. Listen, if you want to make an omelet, you got to crack a few eggs.
Oh boy. Well, I want to go back. There's a lot to unpack. I think with your journey to becoming, you know, a professional drummer that you are today.
Yeah.
It seemed like there's a theme of things that were impactful for you early on. I think that's something that has come up with a lot of our guests, you know, like the music they listen to, having lessons early on, playing in church early on. That advice, you know, to someone, you know, in their 30s and 40s, that advice may be like, well, shit, I can't go back in time. But I think for the parents that are listening to this, that's a huge thing that comes up a lot. It's like, get your kids engaged early on. And that's like a huge, huge thing.
Well, and, you know, growing up, I only took drum lessons, like structured drum lessons from one guy for like a year and a half. And it was Glenn Simons, who used to live here. He lives back in California now. But he played drums for Eddie Money for like 40 years.
Oh.
And was like one of Eddie's like only drummers. And it was really cool because on tour last year, we played in Sacramento where he lives now. And I got to like get him backstage passes and like have him like watch me play for the first time in like 15 years.
Yeah, wow.
How did that feel in that moment?
It was kind of surreal.
Yeah.
Cause I mean, dude's played with Eddie Money and he was freaking out over my gear and like my playing. And I'm like, dude, like
I'm here because of you.
Yeah. I've like, especially later on in life, have definitely tried to, for lack of a better word, like not pay homage, but recognize some of the people who've definitely like helped me get to where I am. Because, I mean, other than that, I'm just some scrawny kid trying to play 2 and 4.
Yeah.
And yeah, they're definitely up until, I mean, even today, like there are people who are playing a part in my career and my journey who definitely don't realize like the impact they're having.
Yeah. That's so well said. We didn't come out of the womb playing drums, you know, like
no.
Me and any musician, any artist, like those are all taught skills and experiences.
For
and
sure.
There's always people, mentors, family members, teachers along the way that informed our journeys.
Yeah.
Lowboy Custom Beaters. These guys make the absolute best sounding, best feeling, and best looking bass drum beaters in the game.
Yeah, I bought my first Lowboy in 2016. It was a red and blue with white stripes, and I was able to design it and buy it right on their website, and Lowboy has been my go-to beater ever since. This thing feels and sounds great on any gig, and they just look even better.
One thing I really love about Lowboy is that you can customize the tone of your beater in addition to the look. Go with a wood striking surface for maximum attack, leather for a warm punch, felt if you want it a bit boomier, or lamb's wool for those felt but not heard kick drum tones.
You can buy Lowboy beaters here in Nashville at Forks, Drum Supply, and Nelson Drum Shop. You can also demo all 8 beater models at Drumbox. Check them out at lowboybeaters.com.
So the other thing I want to get back to is because you mentioned the percussion background.
Yeah.
And we've had a few guests on that have had percussion upbringings as well. And that always interests me as a classical guy as well. You mentioned you did some middle school band and drumline, marching band, right?
Yes.
How did that transition into attending, was it Union University?
Yeah. So I did, concert band and symphonic band in middle school and high school and did drumline. Didn't really... Like, it was one of those things where I didn't do a whole ton of, like, mallets or timpani or anything in high school or middle school. Mm-hmm. And it quickly got to the point where I was like, oh, I might need to kind of know this stuff. Mm-hmm. Especially when I was, like, getting ready for college auditions.
Yeah.
It was one of those things where, like, every, year you have, like, a concert and... like Christmas concert and there's a fall concert and spring concert and all that stuff. And it was always like they're passing out, percussion parts. And it's like, okay, Luke's going to play snare drum and this guy's going to play bass drum and all the kids in the pit are going to play the mallet parts. And like everyone just play what you played in marching band. And
that was always, I know for me, sorry to interrupt, but
no, you're good.
That was always like the most exciting part was like, because a lot of times, like you said, the parts would just be handed to you. You didn't have a say.
No.
But it was always like, oh, he's the snare guy. He's going to be put on triangle.
Yep.
And then you got the mallet guy. That's all they can really do. But it was always so, and I was more well-rounded. So, I mean, I could really do anything. So it was fun to be like, oh, what am I going to play this time?
I was the snare drum and bass drum guy. That was all I did.
You held it down though, right?
But yeah, then when I started getting into like auditions, because even after high school, like I thought about doing drum corps. And I remember Marcus Finney telling me, because I met Marcus when I was in sixth grade and we kind of kept a relationship. And I remember him just looking at me and saying, you can either pay to play drums or get paid to play drums. And I was like,
he's got the best like one line zingers.
It's like, I mean, he sure does.
I was like, awesome. Perfect. Yep. I will get paid.
Yeah. I mean, that activity is only getting more expensive. It really is.
So much.
But not to understate, of course, the extreme benefits of anyone that has participated in drum corps.
Yeah.
But certainly is not the only way. And it is a privilege for sure.
Yeah. And I started right before my college audition. I kind of got a little bit of I wouldn't say a late jump on looking at colleges, but was still trying to figure the whole thing out. And got on just visiting schools and just seeing what I wanted to do. And was very conscious about asking like, okay, so when can I do drum set and what's the program kind of look like? And so finally settled on Union and,
Where's Union?
Union's in Jackson, Tennessee. Okay. So it's about 2 hours away from Nashville West. It's like a small Christian school. I think like maybe like 3,000 students, super small. I was one of 2 percussion majors.
Wow.
Went there for percussion performance and had to do timpani, snare drum, 4 mallets, had to be proficient in piano, all the stuff. I kind of got thrown into the fire and I was like,
dang,
oh, wow. And I didn't really vibe with the whole classical side of stuff. Like it definitely shaped my playing. But I really wanted to do drum set in like a commercial setting. And when I was looking at colleges, I knew I didn't want to go to Belmont because I had a friend who was a couple years older than me and he was in like crazy debt from Belmont.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I don't want to be in debt. That would be great not to be in debt.
Yeah.
So I started looking around after Union. It was kind of my spring semester. And I was like, do I drop out? What do I do? And Union has this really cool thing called J-Mester. And you're off, like, so you get off for Christmas break in December. And if you want to take a class, you come back in January and you take a class every day for the entire month of January and you just knock out a credit.
Dude.
Or you can just not come back until February.
And you have the option.
And so I was like, I'm not going to come back till February and I'm just going to come back home and really try to like make this work and see if like the music thing can work. And so I lined up some gigs, and the whole entire month I was here, I just played gigs and met people that, you know, didn't know me because I was, you know, in high school or whatever. And the cool thing about growing up in church in town is a lot of the older guys on stage are session players.
Yeah.
And so do y'all know who Lonnie Wilson is?
Yes.
Wilson went to my church. Wow. And there are a bunch of other songwriters and a bunch of other crazy session players that went to my church. And so through just those connections, was able, when I was home, to sit in on a session. And it was Lonnie Wilson, Blair Masters, King, and Mike Bernardello. So Jeff King on guitar, Mike Bernardello on bass. And dude, I was like, okay, like I'm coming home.
Wow.
Like, I got to figure out how I'm going to come home, but I need to be here.
Yeah.
Because I had always been just so fascinated with just sessions. Like, it always just did something in my brain that I was like, this is so cool. Mm-hmm. So was back at Union trying to figure out what was going on. And my dad sent me an email from Lipscomb and was like, hey, Lipscomb's starting a commercial music program. And like, would you be interested? Like this person reached out to me and I was like, sure. Like, I'll try. And so spring break came around. That was like the Wednesday before spring break. Spring break happened. I drove home and met with Charlie Peacock, who is starting the commercial music program, which Charlie Peacock like discovered Switchfoot and produced The Civil Wars.
Wow.
And like crazy producer, and also had like a full career of his own.
Yeah.
And so we were like talking, and he's like, well, if you want to be in this commercial music program, like we're just starting it. This is the first year. Like, if you want to come, then for sure. And so I was like, yeah.
What an offer. I mean,
and so I,
the guinea pig at a new.
Yeah. So I left and went and hung out with all my friends at the beach on spring break, and then came back and I was like, oh, I guess I transferred. So finished out my time at Union and then moved home and started at Lipscomb. And Lipscomb was super cool, and they, all their adjunct fac, like, so for like theory and classical percussion and all that stuff, it's full-time faculty. But for all your commercial music classes, it's all adjuncts. And they all have to be currently working in the industry, which was a game changer.
Yep.
And, you know, transferring to Lipscomb got me to reconnect with Marcus, who I hadn't seen in a couple years. And so he taught me at Lipscomb, which both of you know Marcus. Dude's just a bad man.
He's such a bad man.
Yep. Like, I got to learn from him. And if y'all know Greg Lohman, he's a great player in town, played for Kelly Pickler and Easton Corbin. But getting to learn from both of them and just getting to learn how to be a pro and how to do it right. Mm-hmm. And in my time at Lipscomb, after that first year, I was really struggling. I was like, I don't want to work in like a fast food restaurant or something in the summer to make money.
Right.
'Cause I mean, I was playing gigs, but not enough. And so being in Nashville, I knew about something that a lot of people don't. And I was like, hey, Marcus, do you have anyone to like, any cartage guys? And he was like, yeah, I got a guy. Do you want me to like set you up with him? And I was like, yeah. So he has an Instagram account. It's called The Drum Tamer. Mm-hmm. And we went and got Baja Burrito.
There you go.
And he kind of, not like interrogated me, but like just wanted to see how much I knew. And so started doing cartage for Marcus. And he started throwing me like some of his other clients. And he got busy on the road teching for Spoon and was like, hey, do you just want to take all my clients? And I was like,
beautiful.
Sure. So I was like 20, 21. and I was running a cartage business.
And just for the listeners that don't know what cartage is, just explain that real quick.
So cartage is, I would pick up the drums from, you know, their house or their storage unit or whatever, take it to a studio or a venue, set it up to their liking, tune it to their liking, and then they would play the show session, and then I would come in, tear it down, get it back to where it needs to go. Yep. And luckily enough, that put me in contact with some crazy drummers and just helped me make a lot of friends that I wouldn't have made otherwise.
Yeah.
So I did that for 6 years. So from the time I was 21 to the time I was 26.
Wow. So while you were still in school?
So the whole rest of the time I was in school, mm-hmm. and then after. And so there was a good portion of time where I was playing on the road professionally with label acts and doing cartage at the same time. And my two main guys were Marcus, and then I started carting for another guy named Ian Fitchuk, which if you don't know Ian Fitchuk, he's a crazy multi-instrumentalist, writer, producer. Mm-hmm. So I started carting for him, and both him and Marcus were really good about knowing what I wanted to do and giving me opportunities to see that in action. Mm-hmm. So I would walk in, they'd be like, hey, if you want to just hang around today at this session, just be, and I knew, I mean, I was lucky enough just to know from growing up here, like, keep my mouth shut, gonna stand against the wall, not say a word, just watch.
Yeah, just be a fly.
And I remember getting to cart for Ian for one and just being a fly on the wall for session after session. And that whole entire like season became Casey Musgrave's golden hour.
Wow.
So getting to like set up the drums, tune the drums for that whole thing was gnarly.
That's insane, dude.
And, you know, the only hand I had in any of that was setting it up and tuning them. And then sometimes I would leave. Sometimes they would be like, it's cool if you stay.
Yeah.
But just seeing like their workflow and how they operate. And he's a piano player mainly. And so seeing how he plays drums and like how he would, you know, add stuff in, definitely I would go home and be like, okay, I'm going to try that or do this or, you know, he was the first person who I saw who would put like he would have a ride cymbal and then like, you know, a 24 and then his two crashes would be 22 light rides. Hmm. And just like these just huge cymbals and seeing how those translate through the mics to the board and being like, oh, okay. Like there's a reason the guys do this. And yeah dude, I got to learn just so much in that through the, and I mean, that was probably the best side hustle I could ever have.
Yeah, no kidding.
Just to learn from those two guys and a ton of others who I got to do just, you know, whether it was a one-off or whatever.
I mean, there's something so valuable in that, right? It's like for people that are like, oh, I want to be a professional drummer. I want to just go on tour. I want to play, right? I think that's the common, like, okay, the end goal is to perform, but you know, it's cool hearing from your story. Like there's all those in between things that can help get you there, you know, like for you is being a drum tech and carding and getting close to the action, you know, and sitting in on sessions. If you want to be a studio guy, like, you know, there's so much you can learn from just seeing others in action. Yeah. Like we were talking about before, like having those mentors, like having people like Marcus knowing what you wanted and then just being so nice to be like giving you those opportunities when they were able to.
And my whole thing was, you know, I was very blessed to have that opportunity, but my mindset going into it was I just want to do something with music. Yeah. Like I don't want to work, you know, something that's just mind numbing and isn't helping me get to where I want to ultimately be. And if I can, you know, and was it always glamorous, like driving down to a studio at 3 o'clock in the morning to set something up? No, but it.
3 a.m.?
Yeah, sometimes.
Dude.
Like the session would end and I'd have to go down there and
because I'm
not going to go in there when they're tracking like the last guitar. Like sometimes I would, but you know, and just like reading the situation and not. But I mean, that all that time got me to meet like a bunch of guys at Sound Emporium who are really good friends now, and a bunch of other engineers who are really good friends. And, you know, it's also crazy because I got to see a bunch of friends who are like an assistant engineer and now they're like mastering stuff.
Yeah.
And
it's cool seeing those early connections, like seeing your friends develop their own careers.
For sure.
Get their wins.
It's especially like, y'all know this, like the whole Red Door community, like people you meet at Red Door and y'all are both just grinding. And then you both like finally start to get, you know, your flowers and it's like,
yep.
All right, we're both doing something right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, that is one of the special things about Nashville and this community is because everyone is grinding like that.
Yeah.
Everyone's going to do something cool.
Yeah.
Like, there's, as long as they're cool, if they're a cool person and if they're just doing good work, like you're going to succeed. It might not look like what you think it's going to look like 5 years from now. But you are gonna go places unless you get hit by a bus.
That's, yeah,
you know, and tomorrow's not promised.
No,
but it's like knowing that, like, man, I'm so excited to see what everyone's doing in 5 years, and it also is such good motivation to just not be a dickhead to people. Like,
absolutely,
you have no idea who's gonna be the next like Rick freaking Rubin. Like, you have no idea.
It's so much about the hang. It's not even funny.
It really is.
And I think, like, people, we all joke about that, but it's so true.
Yeah.
Like, it's, and, you know, it's crazy just to see, and, like, I think I've been so happy just to see just friends, like, people I care about and really want to see succeed just get what they deserve.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, there's some people who probably shouldn't get what they deserve.
Yeah.
But yeah, just like, yeah, it's just been really cool just to see my friends succeed and do awesome things.
Yeah.
And like, you know, I try to be very intentional when I see like a friend, you know, get a tour or get a cut on a record or whatever, like reach out and be like, dude, that's so awesome. Like, so happy for you. Like, you totally deserve this.
Yeah.
Dude, that's awesome. And I'm sure they appreciate that so much.
Yeah.
You know, it's easy, like now we can all hit like on a Facebook, yeah, Instagram post, but going a step further and just texting them or calling them if you have that relationship.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's such a more meaningful way to communicate.
Or just, you know, taking them to lunch or,
yeah,
you know, as, you know, we get busier and busier, you're not always able to see your friends or y'all aren't always home at the same time. And so whenever, you know, like this, but you know,
exactly.
There's, yeah, I've had so many friends where, you know, it's literally like text, like, hey man, you in town this week? Can we get lunch? Mm. And it's like, no, I'm out. What about next week? Oh, I'm out. What about next week? Oh, I'm out.
Yeah.
And it's just this back, yeah, and forth.
But we'll have a good year. We'll try, yeah, again next year.
I've had a few friends that it's been going like, that's been the last year and a half.
It's like, well, yeah, I'll see you at a show. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll get on the same tour.
Yeah. Yeah,
possibly. Yeah. But dude, yeah, that's, but those relationships matter, and just friends and your circle, you don't realize like how great it is to have the, like, not even just those people in your life, but people who understand what you're doing and, you know, frustrations you may have or, you know, questions. I mean, to have friends who can just be like a sounding board for stuff I'm trying to figure out. Just be like, hey man, like, I'm having this situation. What do you think about that? And then be like, well, I've had that situation before. Or, you know, I would handle it like this. And be like, okay, cool. Like, I'm not crazy.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
It's just another reason why relationships are important.
Absolutely.
I think that's kind of the name of the game, not just in music, but in life.
Like, yeah.
It's really all about your relationships, and that's, you know, it's not just relationships to people. It's your relationship to people, to your profession, to whatever daily responsibilities you have, your relationship to your creator. Like, it's all of it. It's just relationship.
Yeah.
And if you do it wrong, you just wreck your life. But if, yeah, you do it right, it makes things really, really pleasant.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's just, it's good not to do life alone. Agreed. To have those people that you can do life with, whether, even if you don't see them for a year and a half. Yeah. It's great.
So you mentioned that you want to be a pro and you want to do things right. Yeah. Do things the right way. Let's go deeper into those, both of those things.
Oh, man.
What does being a pro mean to you, and what does doing things the right way mean?
That's a really good question.
Thank you.
Thank you. I pride myself. I think for me, being a pro, more than you realize, is the value of time. And not just your time, but other people's time. And I'm very conscious of, say I'm rehearsing at like SIR, and rehearsal starts at 6. I'm getting there at 5. And by the time everyone walks in at 5:45, 6, my stuff's going to be set up.
Yeah.
I'm going to be ready to go. And because, you know, we may only have 2 hours for rehearsal, or we may have a whole entire day, but I'm not going to waste their time.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it goes even a step further of being prepared and coming knowing the music so you're not wasting their time. Because, you know, we've all sat in those rehearsals where someone's like learning it on the spot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I had a really good mentor in college. His name's Rod Taylor. And I remember him telling me there's a difference between practice and rehearsal. And I was like,
yeah, there is.
I was like, oh man, that one hits a little close to home.
Yeah.
And so I've tried to be very mindful of coming into rehearsal to rehearse and not to practice, and knowing my part. And, you know, one thing I learned early on was like charting, like how valuable charting is. And, you know, for example, like I'm playing a Christmas show. I'm in the house band in a couple weeks. And I played it last year, and half the songs are the same. And I don't have to learn the songs again, mm-hmm. like by rote, because I have charts. And knowing how to like transcribe, which, I mean, school definitely helped with that, but transcribed. And then even a step further, not a lot of drummers know number charts. And, you know, as I learned it in college, and then as growing as like an MD and stuff like that, like knowing number charts and being able to communicate to other band members in that way.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, and I mean, besides the time, I think being a pro also is just being prepared, having the right gear, having the right mindset going into a gig, knowing, you know, this is not the time to like chop out. Like, especially if it's a country artist and, you know, a style of music where it's very lyric heavy, like I'm here to support the song and not get an endorsement.
Right. The thing that I feel like maybe some people have some hang-ups with that, certain, most people I think get it, but I think the people that have hang-ups with that are maybe just not understanding that it's not saying that you shouldn't do those things, although some people in that world do think that,
yes.
Which I've met those people. What's the point of that? All that chopping, it's like inherently unmusical. I'm like, you're an idiot. That's not just
a thing. It has a time and a place.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Yeah. Like if you listen, I can listen to like a, you know, Mason Guidry do a drum solo that like turns my insides into my outsides. And I'm like, I thought that was super, super musical. But I just like that, like you said, there's a time and a place. And what are you here to, what is your role in this situation? What is that? And some people are willing to, like, I honestly have some respect for this. I have a friend who does some gigging in Austin, and he's like, he does the cover band thing.
Yeah.
And when he goes in, he is just like stupid chopping out.
The whole time?
The whole time. And I've talked to him. I'm like, so yeah, like, what's your deal with that? He's like, yeah, just if they don't want that, they just won't hire me again. And I just don't want to play a gig without being able to do that. I'm like, well,
all right,
you always have the option to just take that risk. For like,
I guess,
and do too much.
Yeah. Like, I don't want to take that risk.
I know. Right. I'm like, yeah. Oh man, how do you? I'm like, I want to do like. I want to balance that because it's cool to stay hired,
Yes.
But it's cool to chop.
There's one meme that has popped up over the years that I think is hilarious. And it's, you know, some dude with a Neil Peart drum set and he's going crazy. And there's a person standing off side.
You're amazing.
Yeah. And then there's a person with like a four piece and it's like, you're hired.
Yeah.
I'm like, I want to be your hired.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like in a perfect world, this is going to sound so weird, but in a perfect world, you'll never know I'm there. Mm-hmm. Like I will fit the song so well that I won't even cross your mind.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it's probably had to do with growing up here and just it being such a song town.
Yeah.
And I think I'm such a lyric person. Like when I play sessions, if it's possible, like I always prefer to have a lyric sheet.
That's cool.
Because
then you know what story you're actually supporting.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there may be, I've done it so many times, but basing my kick pattern around like one phrase. Mm-hmm. And if it all hits right, it's the most important phrase of that, you know, verse or that chorus. And my kick pattern is just a kick pattern until it hits
that moment,
until it hits that phrasing and it lines up.
Yo.
And you're like, oh,
that's clever.
But like listening to the lyrics and like you said, like knowing what story. Because, I mean, if this is a story about heartbreak, I mean, unless it's like, you know, a Paramore song, like I'm not just going to be like thrashing, just slamming.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, and knowing.
Which, hire my boy for Paramore. That's all I'm saying.
I mean, hometown band, man. Yeah. Franklin, Tennessee.
That's true.
Oh, yeah. Wow. I didn't know that.
Their mom taught at my middle school.
Yeah.
Amazing.
But, yeah, it's just all about like knowing, going in and knowing what it calls for. And being prepared for what it calls for, whether that be a jazz thing, which my jazz chops are not that great, but
okay, don't hire him for jazz.
Don't hire me for jazz. But everything else, no.
Yeah, yeah.
But like knowing, like, okay, is this kind of like a, you know, country bar, like we're really going to rock it kind of thing, or you know, if the vocalist is singing lighter, like I have to pull back a little bit and be able to support that. And feel what the other musicians are doing and being prepared. And I've had this come along in sessions where, you know, sometimes there's players you've never played with before or a producer you've never worked with. And you put down your first idea and they are not feeling it at all. And being prepared enough to be like, okay, I got like five more.
Yeah.
And just trucking through those and trying to, and, you know, taking what they say and, you know, what comes to your mind and trying to figure out how to best portray the story and the song that they want.
Yeah.
And I think that comes, you know, where that ties into preparedness is opening yourself up to tons of different musical references. And I have friends that, you know, will post on Instagram like a, you know, a song on their story and I've never heard it before, never heard of that band. And I'm like, I'm gonna go listen to them just in case down the line someone mentions this band or this song.
Yeah.
And I need a frame of reference of where they're going.
Yeah. What a good mindset. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's
especially if it's a big song.
Absolutely. And there's, you know, especially like the last couple of years, my country repertoire has obviously grown immensely.
Yeah.
But
same here.
You're like, oh man, like I didn't know that I could know off the top of my head that Neon Moon is 102, but it is.
Right.
and you know, like something like that is at 86, but it feels better at 88. Like,
hashtag drummer things.
Yep.
Right. Expanding, and don't be like, I'm just a country drummer or I'm just a rock guy. And if that's what you want to do, go do that.
Yeah.
By all means, be that guy. But I've always just approached it of the mindset of I want to be able to fit wherever you want to take this.
Yeah.
And especially in sessions like that being, for whatever reason, that's just such like a creative headspace for me. Like it's the closest thing to a drug on this planet. Just having that knowledge and those references to be able to just drop in and be like, okay, you want the Wild Rivers. Okay, I've heard like four songs of them. I know what the kind of vibe you're going for is. It's kind of like an Americana, but also kind of like an R&B kind of thing. So just, yeah, dude, the preparedness and the time is just, I can't overstate those enough.
Yeah, man.
You touched on two things that I want to kind of backtrack to a little
bit.
Absolutely. The first one is that being kind of well-rounded and just being aware of music, you know, aware of things that are happening that are, I don't know if you want to call it not, important isn't the right word because just music itself is important. I don't want to deem anything unimportant just because it's unknown. But things that are having a big impact, especially, are things you don't even have to be influenced by them, but just having an awareness of what's happening is important. I really think that it's like okay, so that's, even if you want to be countercultural, if you want to, like, you know what, this is the trend right now, I'm going to do the opposite for whatever reason, whether that's an artistic decision or whether it's a business decision. Maybe you think, like, I think it's a smarter move for us to go in the opposite direction of this big trend, and that oftentimes it is.
Yeah. But how can you do the opposite of something if you don't know what that thing is?
Right. Exactly.
I think that's what you're saying.
So you should be aware. And the thing is, if you, everything you do is a sacrifice of some sort. Mm-hmm. If you're saying, I'm going to just be a country drummer, or I'm just a rock drummer, I'm just a whatever, jazz, gospel, fusion, metal, like, okay, so I'm sacrificing these other things for that. And if you say, I'm going to be well-rounded, I'm gonna try to pull from a bunch of different sources, then maybe you for a time might sacrifice on the depth of, like, well, you know what, my like jazz samba feel might never be like the dopest.
Yeah.
So like it's a wise man once said, pick your damn sacrifice. Which what are you willing to give up in 10 years? Where do you want me? Like, you know what, I'm okay that I just chose to just play blast beats. I'm okay with that. But, all right, hey, dude, if that floats your boat, that's rad, man. Awesome.
Exactly.
Yeah. And if you, like, you know what? I want to listen to, like, 10,000 pieces of music and pull little bits and pieces out that I identify with. I'm like, oh, that's really cool. What is that? Let me figure that out. Let me figure out how that feel works. Like, and it feels like the more you do that, the faster you're able to pick those things up, you know.
Yeah. Okay,
what makes that tick? And it, very rarely do you find something you're like, man, that's totally unlike anything. You're like, okay, well, like a swing feel.
Yeah.
Like, well, what percentage of swing? What are we talking about? Is it just a triplet? Well, now we're finding out it's not just a triplet. Like, okay. Well, now it's like 45%. Oh, this is like a 35%. And all of these people moving their logic sessions, moving that dot over just a little bit. Ooh. Okay. So it's behind the beat, but it's not as behind the beat as this other thing that I do.
Yep.
Like, all of that categorical knowledge just soaks into you. Anyway.
Well, and like, you know, off of like trying to figure out, you know, swing and stuff like that, it goes into like having that vast knowledge. And I don't want to say I have a vast knowledge because there's a lot of music I haven't heard. But going in and, like you said, like listening, like, why does that sound that way? And how can I make it sound that way? Because I, you know, firmly believe that everyone feels stuff and has a different feel. Like, no drummer's feel is the same.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You might get close.
Yeah.
But like, I definitely don't sound like Beccaro. But Beccaro doesn't sound like me.
Right.
And
yeah, Buddy Rich doesn't sound like me at all. It's weird.
You're better, right?
You said it.
Except when you talk.
I did say it. I'll stand by that.
Yeah.
You're breaking my heart out there. Anyone who hasn't heard the bus tapes, honestly.
we need to play those.
What a,
just for a second.
We need to actually do a bus tapes reaction video.
Ooh, reaction videos. Yes.
Just drummers who haven't seen them yet.
So, dude, they're so good. They're so good.
Dude, well, and like, you know, I think far too often we have our instrument And for what I feel like it's more common with drums than other instruments is like this is the standard way you play a drum set.
Yeah.
And I remember when I was teching for Marcus, seeing his ride cymbal, and he had like circles and X's on his ride cymbal with like a magic marker. And I was like, what are those? And he's like, those are sweet spots of where I want to hit for certain things.
Cheat code.
And I was like, oh, wow.
You can do that?
And
that's allowed?
I remember him showing me like playing hi-hat. And I wanted something to feel not like 808-y, but kind of like loopy and kind of like chunky. And I was just playing the hi-hat, you know, with like the shoulder of the stick just right on the edge of the hi-hat.
Yeah.
And he was like, no. He's like, go flat across and play with the side of the stick on like the top of the hi-hat. Mm. And it's just like this. And it wasn't even like a tick. It was just like static. A straight like body of the stick just on the side of the hi-hat.
Yeah, I love
just
that sound.
And I was like, oh, they're like, you can do so many different things.
Yeah.
And
if you open your mind to those things.
Right. And I definitely think we have an advantage with, you know, the world of Instagram and TikTok, because you get to see other guys. You're like, oh man, I would have never thought to do that.
Right.
It may not even be that. It may be they just do one little fill or one little ghost note or something, and it just sets off something else in your brain. And
yes.
You're like, what if I did that? And just like it's, and then suddenly, you know, you go down this rabbit hole and you're like feeding off yourself, and it's just, okay, that's cool. And then you get into like even something like a snare drum, and you're like, oh, well, there's only like certain ways to like tune a snare drum. And then you're like, oh, but I can do this and that. And what if I put a towel over it? And then I start taking gaff and then like putting gaff all around it, and then do like a piece of paper and some gaff. And then
there's literally unlimited ways to play.
There's unlimited ways.
But when you first start out, you're just trained to think,
right,
this is a snare drum. This is what it does. That's the only way it does it.
Yep.
And you're going to like it.
Well, that's the thing. So when we grow, we have to have some sort of category that we're working within, you know?
Yeah.
Because if you just say all options are valid, then you go, okay, so what should I work on? That's the problem, is then you have option paralysis.
Yes.
But so you have to go, okay, so I'm going to work on specifically this category because it's interesting to me now. And that's my path for right now. And then when I get here, then you have to reopen yourself up to those ideas. And one of those things that I think gets a hiccup in a lot of musician systems, I remember having a problem with this. I would hear guitar players say, blah, 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 that's such bad tone. And I was like, something in my brain went, I don't think there's such a thing as bad tone.
It's just less desirable tone.
Right.
Yeah, that's right.
Bad context.
Yes.
Like, ooh, that didn't work for this context. But I'm like, I guarantee you can find a context where that tone is perfect. I would bet my life.
Dude, it's like,
good point. Yep.
It's the reason when we go into like sessions or on a gig or whatever, it's the reason you choose the cymbals you choose.
Yes.
The heads you choose, the snare you choose. Because,
exactly.
You know, we all have several different snare options, but picking the right one, and then on top of that, picking the right tuning for that. And, you know, when you're in the middle of a set and they have a song where it's like just this big, fat, like gushy snare drum.
Yeah.
But the rest of the song is just this really tight thing. And then you're like, okay, do I bring a second snare? Do I put a big, fat snare drum on it?
Yep. Yeah.
What do I do? You know, and then that goes into part of that preparedness is having the right gear to execute the job and get the job done. Because you can show up with a CB700 and some B8s and kind of get the job done.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, as you grow, it goes so far beyond the playing, because it gets to the point where the playing is a given.
Right.
And it gets to the point where, okay, what do you sound like? And like, what does your kit sound like? And what is your sound? And then, okay, the playing you have, what ideas do you bring to the table that no one else does?
Right. Yeah, what else can you offer now?
And like,
how can you be valuable?
Dude, it's like, it's stupid stuff. Like
identity.
It's identity. Mm-hmm. And I've struggled with it for a really long time about whether when I play on a song or when someone hears me, do I want them to be like, oh, that's Luke Sumner on the drums?
Yeah.
Or do I want to be like, those drums sound great?
Yeah.
I think, and as I've thought about it more, I think I'd much rather them have, like, say, those drums sound great than call me out.
This song sounds great. This track sounds great.
Because I don't know if I want to, I don't want to have such a recognizable identity. Hmm. I want to be as much of a chameleon as possible and fit whatever they need me to fit.
Yeah.
Which is such a weird thing as like an artist, because most people think like artists, like you want to be known.
Yeah.
You want to be famous. I tell people all the time, like, I have no desire to be famous, like at all. Like, I'll play the show, hang out with my friends, go to sleep on the bus, and mm-hmm. I'm fine.
Yeah.
I don't need to sign autographs or anything. And it actually is kind of weird, but
That's such an interesting point. I appreciate you saying that, because I feel like we're all grown up, you know, our idols are the Buddy Riches. Like, we have the names of drummers that we know them because of who they are on the drums. And especially in the social media world, it's like, you know, you're known because of you, and this is your content, this is your sound, this is all about you.
Yeah.
But that doesn't have to be the end result. And especially, like, it may actually be more professional to not be like that.
Yeah. And I think, I think part of it was I was so obsessed with the session guys.
Yeah.
And like growing up, like people would be like, who's your favorite drummer? And they'd be like, oh, Trey Cool. Or, and I'd be like, oh, no, mine's like Picaro and, you know, Lonnie Wilson and Kenneth Buttry and Eddie Bears and Larry London. And they're all like, who? And I'm like, the guys who have shaped popular music as you know it.
Yeah. Yep.
Like.
Well, I got to push back a little bit.
Oh, okay.
Because, I mean, to me, Picaro just oozes identity.
I could see that.
That's, that's the thing. When I think of him and specifically Vinny as well.
Yes.
Vinny, I'm like, the thing about Vinny is he can do both. Because when he like plays for real, you're like, oh, that's Vinny. I know that's Vinny. And I know it in like 2 seconds.
Yeah.
But he can also just be like, I can do what, like, he put out, like, did like Faith Hill's albums, and you're like, I would never have known.
Yeah.
Until I watched the video, and it's literally just him playing with him. Oh,
I'd say same with Steve Gadd, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I saw him live as James Taylor. He's just professional, great.
And plays
great
the same
show,
kit
you know?
On every.
Yeah, but I don't think I would have been like, oh, that was Steve Gadd playing, because he was just playing groove and it was sounding good.
But also at the same time, he's the guy who played 50 Ways to Leave Your Lover.
Yeah,
and like, which is the most identity you can have.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, that's like, no one else on the planet would have
thought of that
groove. That.
No, not and a shot.
And so I'm like, I believe, this is my own opinion, and I'm not trying to force it on you.
Okay.
But my opinion and my approach is like being able to have that flexibility, which was the other thing I wanted to come back to.
Yeah.
When you're like coming in to a session and be like, here's my first way I would think to play this, but then also being like, but if they want it something like this, what about, and the having the whatabouts, having like 4 or 5, okay, well, I've already kind of planned ahead for that. That's preparation.
Mm-hmm.
But like each one of those being like, and this is my spin. I think this would be cool. Like that's, and I think that's, The thing is, you will always have your identity as you play.
Yes.
Because you have the things that you think sound good. And you think, well, I think this fits. And I think that I think my kick drum locking with the vocal in the third verse, this line right here, like that's really cool. I'm like setting it up here. And that's my thought process. That's already identity.
Yeah.
So I would argue you do have a ton of identity in that. That would be my humble disagreement.
Yeah. And I think, you know, bouncing off that is, you know, you come in one thing that my grandfather and my dad always used to tell me is as you grow and as you're building your career, you have a toolbox and you're putting tools in that toolbox. And, you know, some people's toolbox is what it's going to be at 18.
Yeah.
Some people's toolbox is what it's going to be at 30.
Just a couple of hammers.
And yeah, some people, you know, some people might open their toolbox and they got four hammers.
Yeah.
And I might have a screwdriver and a saw and whatever. But I think
a flamethrower.
But I think Sick. That's like what yeah. makes your identity your identity. And like the Vinny thing, you know, you listen to the Sting album, Seven Summers Tale.
Dude.
And I think it's him and Omar Akeem on that record. And you can't tell who's on which song.
Is Omar on that too?
I'm pretty sure.
I love Omar.
Because I know Sting's on it. We were just talking about this. Now I got to check. I'm very curious.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure it's on that record. It's Omar and it's Vinny. I could be wrong, but I'm like pretty sure.
Ben, can you look that up for us?
Yeah.
We have our intern.
Our invisible.
For that.
The invisible intern.
Who lives in the walls.
He lives in the walls. We knock and he answers.
Josh Diamond just comes out of the walls. Make sure you pay your rent.
Hey, drummers. Are you worried about losing your hearing? Did you know noise exposure can cause permanent hearing loss?
Dr. Jason Baker with Music City Audiology provides mobile concierge services to musicians in Nashville and surrounding areas. That's right. He is 100% mobile and will come to you. If you need ear impressions, custom in-ear products, ear cleaning, hearing tests, or information about protecting your ears, he's your guy. Music City Audiology cares about drummers and wants to help you maintain your most valuable tools, your ears. Visit MusicCityAudiology.com to book your consult today. That's MusicCityAudiology.com.
Well, while you're looking that up, something that I just was thinking, first of all, I mean, this kind of, I loved all of these topics. And I think, you know, when I first asked you like how to be professional and I appreciated that you took time to really think about it. And you kept coming back to, I love this. You kept going back to, you know, doing something and then, oh, but one step further. You kept saying that. It's like, okay, I'm going to show up on time, but what would happen if I came an hour earlier?
Yeah.
Or I'm going to chart. What would happen if I took an extra hour on that chart?
Yeah.
Or if I practiced for one more extra hour, you know, like people talk about waking up at 5 a.m. You know, what happens when you just have more time?
Yeah.
You know?
Well,
it's just such a great mindset to have.
It's just being, the professional aspect goes, that time aspect just goes so far beyond what you initially think. And, you know, it's being ready when, you know, you're on the road and your sound check. Don't be like waddling in last minute.
Yeah.
And being efficient in sound check. And also like taking your time instead of, you know, getting off stage and going and having a drink and partying or whatever. Like, so I was playing with an artist named Connor Smith, who's my first label artist out of college, and played with him starting in 2019. And up until when I decided to leave in October 2022, and was his MD through part of that. And we were on the Thomas Rhett tour. And it was us, First of Three, Parker McCollum, Thomas Rhett. And I would get off stage every night, pack up as quick as I could, run and get like a water or something, pack up my ears, whatever. And then I would stand side stage and watch the rest of the night.
Hmm.
And it wasn't like a social hour. Like I was
learning.
Be a sponge, right?
And I became friends with Taylor Nyquist, who is monitor assistant for Thomas. And it got to the point where I would show up side stage and he would have a pack waiting for me.
Dude.
And he cool. set Respect. It up. He set it up and I could switch through people's mixes. And so I would stand side stage for every show and would just watch and just click through and just be like, why is this person's mix that way? Why is this person's mix that way? And then hearing, you know, the way they communicate as a band and how they, you know, handle transitions, then turning around and using that in how I build shows and how I arrange shows and how I MD, and that's, and I will die on this hill. That is the nicest, most humble camp in country music, if not of all of music. Mm-hmm. Like the Thomas Rhett camp is incredible.
Just class act.
Just class act all around. And if you know any member of that band, like, they're all just ridiculous.
Yeah.
In their own rights.
Who's on drums right now?
Chris Kimmerer. So okay. He's been with Thomas for
really, yeah, we got to get him on. Another one of those guys that I like follow. Chris on Instagram, is, but I don't know him personally.
Chris is a dude, and he's got, dude, he's just pocket, and he's got chops, and it's just unfair.
Yeah.
But seeing like how they communicate as a band, and you know how they handle, you know, like in having ears on, like you would hear something go wrong. And how they all react, and you would stand at front of house, you would have never known anything happened.
Mm.
Just completely.
Man, what an experience though for you to listen in. I mean, that's, talk about a cheat code, right?
Yeah.
I mean, literally, like, I love hearing how, like, even in, since like college, you know, for you, you've taken every step to just be a student of the game always, and you're just always looking to be informed, you know?
Dude, it wasn't,
just get your hands dirty.
I hope I never get to the point where I feel like I've like learned it all.
Yeah.
Like I don't ever want to be comfortable.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like for example, when I got out of college and got the Connor gig, because I graduated in December 2018, I got the Connor gig in March 2019. I'd had like a little bit of run-ins with Ableton, but I did not know how much I should have. And we would play a show and we'd, you know, get to the hotel or whatever. And I would take the tracks again to me to make sure it didn't get stolen. And then I would just sit in bed and just rip through Ableton and just teach myself like what I could. And I'm definitely still not, like we were talking about Alec Parrish, like, dude's a monster.
Yeah.
But I'm nowhere as good as that, but I've definitely, you know, come a long way since that kid sitting in a hotel room trying to figure it out.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
You're hungry.
Oh, dude.
You've been hungry.
I'm starving.
Well, that's the thing about this industry and this craft. Like, we're never not, like you said, we're never going to just wake up and be like, okay, I'm done. I know all the things. There's always something, there's always a new limits to be pushed.
Oh, absolutely.
There's always new software or a new hack or a new groove or a new gear, or new transition. There's always something.
Dude, it's right? always something. And yeah, I think I've always tried to have the mindset of, I don't think I'll ever be the greatest drummer in the world. Like there are guys with better chops than me. I know it. I'll admit it. But I'm going to outwork you. I'm going to come for you. And, you know, one thing I've definitely realized about this town is if you work hard enough and you have the skills and you have the work ethic, you just kind of have to wait people out.
Hmm.
It's true.
'Cause
I've seen it.
'Cause there are people that, and I think I learned it growing up here, especially like, you know, a kid, I'd have a new kid in my class or new family would show up at church and it's like, what are y'all here to do? And they're like, oh, we're here to make it. And, you know, year or two later, that kid doesn't go to my school anymore.
Right.
And it's like, I wonder why. And they're like, oh, we moved back home because dad wasn't cutting it. And it's a town that is ruthless. And it's an industry that's ruthless, filled with the nicest people in the world. But this town will beat you down over and over again, and it'll beat you down 10 times and you're like, oh, I don't want to get up. And that 11th time you get up, it's like, oh, okay,
he's still getting up. All right,
I'll give him something.
Yeah. Dude, I love that.
And it sucks because I've seen this town break some friends of mine, and it stinks.
Sure. Yeah.
And it blows that they just have to pack it up because it's not working anymore.
Yeah.
But dude, if you can just wait it out, the whole 10-year town thing, like it's true, but dude, it's just waiting it out. It's just playing the game, just like the waiting game of if I come with the right mindset and I continue to be prepared and I continue to show up and, you know, dude, you know, for people who haven't moved here yet or are thinking about moving here, a saying that I always love is you must be present to win.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And that's whether you're not here and you need to move here or whether you're sitting at home every night or you're going to writer's rounds and going to Red Door and going and just hanging out with people, not out there just like social climbing, trying to find a gig.
Yeah.
Just being friends.
Right. It's yeah, relationships. So well said. That's the thing. Like you don't, we talked about this. We did a little round table and I kind of brought it up. Like there's people that will teach you like, well, these are like some networking tricks. I'm like, yeah, that networking tricks are great. Or like you could just be out and just like make just friends.
Be a good human.
Real friends. Like, yes. And that's, it's okay if your motivation for making real friends is like, I know that I need to do that. Like, it's okay to know that you need that because the reality is you always need friends. You need friends. You need relationships. You need to have good influences on your life.
Dude, and being friends has gotten me more work than anything. You know, like when I got with Connor, I grew up with his brother and we were friends growing up and friends all through college. And, you know, 2019 came around and I got a call and Connor was like, hey, like, you want to play drums for me? And it was great because that was my first label gig. And first time I got to play arenas and amphitheaters. And, you know, there in 2022, I was playing for him and Tierra Kennedy. And I was playing drums and MDing for both of them. And from January 1 to the beginning of November, I was gone 260 days on the road. Like I just wasn't home.
Yeah.
But then that Connor relationship allowed me to meet his producer, Zach Crowell, who's become a good friend. And Zach Crowell's how I ended up playing on a Sam Hunt song. And so it's just like one of those things that's just...
Yeah, it's dominoes.
Like he had me play on a Connor song. And out of the blue, I get a call. And I was standing in Home Depot shopping for rugs. And I get a call.
Drum rug or living room rug?
Drum rug.
Nice.
And I get a call from Zach, and he's like, hey, man, what you doing this weekend? It's like, nothing. He's like, you're not on the road? And I was like, no, not this weekend. He's like, cool, I'm going to send a Sam song over. Do you want to play drums on it? And I was like, no, yes. Yeah. And so, yeah, uh-huh. Dude, that it's just, you don't realize just that one chance encounter or that one show or that one gig you play to this bass player is going to turn into 5, 6, however many years down the road.
Yeah.
And the thing is when you're out consistently, because this is something that I feel like people begrudge the locals here, but I don't at all because we're inundated with people that play every instrument and do every musical thing mm-hmm. you can imagine. So if someone forgets about you, it's not because they're a dick. Mm-hmm. It's because they're just...
What's right in front of
it's,
them?
They're a human being, and there's limits on what their brain can contain.
Yeah.
So if you run into someone, I've run into people in a coffee shop, and they're like, "Oh, dude, oh, you know what? I've got a session that you'd be perfect on." Like that yeah, is right. Why it is good to
give yourself
go
those opportunities.
Out and be in the community. Yeah. Allow yourself to be seen. Connect with people
for sure.
Just even just have like a you know what? Every Tuesday I go get tacos at such and such place. Great.
Yep.
You're it's outside
literally
of
literally in Nashville, especially, there's so many opportunities. You know, you got Whiskey J I went to last night, Monday, Thursday. You got writers' rounds every night of the week. Shows every I mean, there's really no excuse to not.
Right. And there are people that I'm friends with that I have a relationship with that I know I will probably never play for.
Yeah.
And that's totally fine because they're a really good friend of mine.
Yeah.
And it's just that and I think like, you know, we've talked about the relationship thing and you can go into it with, this is what I need to do. But I've made a very conscious effort to not have friends and be like, what can I get from you? And I remember I did this in college. I had a professor who's the dean of the college. His name's Brown Bannister, and he's a really well-known producer in the CCM world. And I lied. I texted him and I said, hey, I got Chris McHugh's number, lost it. Do you have it?
Brilliant.
And
I need to start using that. Insert whoever you want. Yeah.
And he sent me the number. I never had Chris McHugh's number. He sent it to me.
Oh my gosh.
And it was either his number or his email. And I sent a message and I was like, hey, you don't know me. My name's Luke Sumner. I would just love to take you to coffee or breakfast or whatever. And so we go get breakfast and we had a great conversation and talked about just so much stuff with drums and how he got his start. And I remember him looking at me afterwards and being like, so what do you want? And I'm like, oh, I just wanted you to know I exist. Like, I'm not
just this. Right,
yeah, here. Yeah. I'm not trying to get. And that was when it first really like clicked in my brain, like, oh, like there are a lot of people in this town that just have relationships with people just to see what,
right,
what I can get out of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, and from then on, I was like, I want to make a conscious effort never to be one of those people.
Yeah. Parasite.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dude, good on you. That's that's really great.
It's, and I think like,
it's a funny story though.
There's
that's
way more.
That's hilarious.
Dude, there's so many of those that.
I'm gonna use that. I lost Aaron Sterling's number.
Oh, yeah.
Right. We're gonna get him on the podcast. We had to reschedule, but if you could just give me that cell phone number.
Dude, yeah, it's
but actually
I've gotten to meet so many.
I could do that actually.
Okay. You should do it.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I would do it.
Yeah.
That's one guy who's totally just like turned some of my ideas on its head.
Oh, dude.
Yeah. Okay.
He's so sick. He played on some of Chris Allen's stuff. Chris is a buddy. I should just reach out to him and be like, hey, man, can I get Aaron's contact from you? Because I want to have him on the podcast.
Yeah. Hey.
You've heard of Drum Supply, but you got to see their shop. It's a drum shop experience like no other. They're packed with all the gear a working drummer needs and so many parts, noise toys, and accessories. It's a toy store. Curated cymbals, kits, and snares. The hands-on percussion room is nuts, and their custom shop work is fast and affordable. Andy and the guys know their stuff, and they're ready to help. And the big news? They've just moved to an awesome new location near the corner of East Trinity Lane and Dickerson Pike. Still in East Nashville, just a couple miles from their old spot, the all-new Drum Supply is twice as big, featuring a dedicated cymbal room, a lesson space, and even more drum gear than ever. Go see the new Drum Supply shop for yourself. Now open 11 to 5 at 2211 Dickerson Pike and online at drumsupply.com.
So as a Nashville native,
yes.
What did it mean to you to play the Grand Ole Opry with Tierra Kennedy? And when was that?
So it was May 28th, 2022.
Okay, it's pretty recent.
Yeah, I've played it 7 times since.
Was that your first time though?
That was my first time.
Okay.
That's a massive jump from zero to that.
Yeah.
You just kept leaving your coat there. You had to keep coming
back. I just kept on. Best sweet tea and popcorn in Nashville. I will.
Okay.
Yeah. If you haven't, you need to. You will.
Okay.
Fine.
Fine. Right. Don't make me.
Okay, I'm leaving now.
But yeah, dude, that was one of the craziest experiences of my life. Because you walk in, you do, you know, rehearsal with the band, and Eddie Barris was the house drummer that night.
Cool.
Dude, he was so kind and just like really just helped me. My parents came backstage and they watched the rehearsal, and we got done with the rehearsal and Eddie was like, hey, like, let me show you like where the kid is and like where the med is. And like, that way you can get your bearings before you just get thrown on here, and it's a throw and go.
Yeah.
And you know, you can't change any of the heights or anything. Like, you're just, you're locked. Which Eddie plays open handed. So if you're like playing kind of like this.
Yeah.
Wait, you can't adjust the house gear?
Mm-mm. At least I was told not to.
Yeah.
Not by Eddie. I was just told like it's
just like a tradition.
It's just like a thing.
Yeah, you don't mess it up.
But he was so nice, and as he was walking me to stage, I passed my parents. I just looked at him, I was like, holy shit.
Dude, what a moment.
Wow.
And dude, like, I mean, this is the dude that like played on 9 to 5. Like,
yeah.
Come on. And, you know, people would see him on like on the street and not think twice about it. But
sorry, I just had this vision of him like making the cash register sound from
ching. Dude, you know the typewriter, you know what the typewriter sound is?
No.
It's Dolly putting her acrylic nails together.
No way.
No kidding.
Yeah.
What? Wow. Well, dude, legendary.
So she's just doing the
fucking Dolly.
Dude, but
legend.
Yeah, and like dude, it was that and Red Rocks. Were like
yeah.
two of the times I got
big
like
bucket list places for you.
Emotional.
Yeah.
Like, dude, it was so weird because when I shaved my head, I had someone from management say, like, we need something on your face. So yeah, I know, right? So like, can you wear sunglasses? And I was like, sure. And my favorite movie of all time is That Thing You Do. And so I was like, absolutely.
Yeah.
And they're like just outside. And I was like, no, like day, night, in, out. I am wearing these.
I'm sunglasses guy now.
Yeah. So
one of my most stylish friends ever, Phil, I love you, buddy. He told me that if you only wear it when it's on stage, then it's a costume. But if you wear it all day, it's part of you.
Good for you. I don't think I could wear sunglasses like right now. Like that would make me feel like kind of a douche. Me personally, like other people can pull it off. Like Kenny Aronoff pulls it off great.
Yeah, totally.
But dude, when I was playing Red Rocks, I had the sunglasses on, and dude, like the sun was setting behind us. Like it couldn't have been like
just picture perfect.
Yeah,
yeah.
And the sun was setting, and it was a sold out crowd, like full. And I was playing, and dude, like for whatever reason, like my grandfather was like one of my best friends. And I started thinking about him like while I was playing. And dude, I was like, I'm so glad I have these sunglasses on because I was just like sobbing. Like just like happy cry.
Oh,
and
dude,
I was just like,
that's the best.
When you're playing, you're like, I don't know why I'm crying right now, but I'm not mad about it. And it was one of those things where it the moment just hit. And like that was one of the best shows we played, like all tour. Like it just everything hit.
Wow.
It was perfect. And, you know, we got done playing one song and the crowd just like erupted and you're just like there are people that are, you know, five times my age that have dreamt about a moment like this their entire lives. And here I am, you know, 27 at the time, getting to experience it. I was like, this is...
Wow, man.
This is crazy.
What a humbling way to put it too, you know?
Yeah.
Not like, oh, I deserve this. But
no,
like,
no.
People might never get to that point.
You know? Yeah, and
it was never promised.
No, absolutely not. And I think, and you know, I think one thing that COVID did was, because, you know, for all of us, especially like in music, like 2020 was hard.
Yeah.
And I remember when I came back to play, I was like, okay, this can be taken away at any second. So I'm really going to enjoy this. And like that whole like tour in 2020 with Thomas Rhett and Connor, I was like, I'm going to take this in. And I was like, you know, if this all ends at the end of this tour, like I want to be like, okay, I did it.
Yeah.
Like I really leaned into it.
I love that. Yeah.
And I think, you know, and I've continued to try to keep that of, you know, all these different milestones really being sure to enjoy the moment. And I think we all have really hard time with that of you always want to be the next place. You always want to think of the next thing. And I'm so guilty of always wanting to be like, okay, what can I do next? What's the next step for me?
And not sitting here.
Not being like, okay, this is special. And, you know, like I'm never going to play the Opry for the first time again. I'm never going to play Red Rocks for the first time ever again. And really just taking in that this could happen 20 more times. This could never happen again.
Mm-hmm.
And sitting in, okay, this is a special thing and I really need to, in a way of not being like, I deserve it, but, you know, you talk about why, you know, some guys have higher, like why we get paid what we get paid. Mm-hmm. And it's not for that show. It's the work and, you know, sitting when you're in sixth grade on a practice pad, practicing paradiddles, like all that work. So it wasn't like, when I was sitting there, I wasn't like, oh, I deserve this. But at the same time, I wasn't like, I've put in work and I've done the thing to be here, and I'm blessed enough to be here.
I'm sure that made it more emotional too.
Absolutely.
Because you know every ounce of every hour, every minute you've worked towards this thing.
Oh, right? Dude.
For it to be paying off.
And it's just, it's wild when it finally pays off. Because it's like a weird, I don't want to say high, but.
I mean, it is.
It is.
Yeah, no, people have commonly described it as a high,
and
as
you're,
a drug, you know, that feeling.
It's like this weird thing where you're like, I've dreamed about this my entire life, and I'm sitting here doing it. Like, you're like, how many guys get to say, I'm a professional drummer, I get to play drums for a living on national tours,
right,
playing arenas? Like, that's not like, you know, an everyday Joe Schmo kind of thing.
Yeah, no, not at all.
And I feel like, you know, it's very easy to take it for granted. So I've tried to be very mindful and not do so.
I love it.
Yeah. There's do you listen to the Punch Brothers?
I do not.
Okay, well, they're amazing.
I will listen to them now.
You absolutely should.
I've heard a couple songs.
I mean, they're just straight up some of the best musicians on the planet. Chris Thiele might be. Jacob Collier said that Chris Thiele is the greatest musician who has ever lived.
Okay.
And I think that's you can make a pretty damn strong argument for it.
But, coming from Jacob Collier, that's a
yeah,
that's a quite the endorsement.
And I saw them play live in New York with Madison Cunningham. It was Chris's show and the New York Phil just playing with them. And
so sick.
Jacob would we're going on a big aside here from what I was making, but I'm still going to make it. Jacob would do his Jacob thing and just make something crazy up on the piano and improvise, and then Chris would follow it like the next bar would be like, jeez, got it. On it and improvising, like insanity.
Yeah, yeah.
Talking about being present, that you sent me to this ending lyrics of Little Lights, which is this beautiful song that they have. And he says, shine little lights of ours like Orion's belt of stars. Guide us back to where we are from where we want to be. So like we are, all of us probably, maybe somebody out there is not guilty of dreaming of being out of the situation that they're, oh man, well, this is cool, but like, what about the next thing? Like,
yeah,
it's cool to be hungry. I'm a big fan. Like, stay hungry. Like, be ready to go on your next adventure, but also make the space to be present in those moments. Like, sometimes those things that don't even feel like wins are actually giant wins.
Yes, absolutely. Like,
and yeah, what you experienced there was a very obvious, massive win.
Yes.
And so cool that you got to go, like, I get to kind of hide behind the glasses and just weep. And just be like, I'm just.
Such a cool story.
So, yeah. That just was a very moving story. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
I don't think we've ever had a guest lead Nate to lyrics.
To lyrics.
Cool. Yeah. That was awesome.
Yeah. I'll be the first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So just a quick follow-up from that. So you've gotten to play, you know, you mentioned the Opry and Red Rocks, and I'm sure you've mentioned, you know, arenas and these really amazing gigs and venues. How do you stay hungry? How do you not finish those gigs or those tours and be like, all right, well, how do you get to, what's coming up next, the next year and the next tour? I mean, how do you continually stay fresh and just motivated, I guess?
I think part of it is I always have this thought of, I'm not done yet. Going back to if it all ended tomorrow, I want to be satisfied. I don't want to be like, I left some stuff on the table. Mm-hmm. But I don't, like we talked about earlier, don't want to be comfortable, don't want to be content. I think you can still be present and hungry. And I always try to, you know, figure out how I can get better at my craft and, you know, still adding those tools to that toolbox. And, you know, like last night, I was messing around with, you know, changing some pre's in my studio and trading some different pre's for what I had snare going through. And, you know, I sat there and was like, oh, okay, I can manipulate it like this and make it sound better and, you know, mess around with mic placement. But it's just it goes back to like never wanting to stop learning. Mm. Like I can always get better. And I don't want to be my own hindrance. I don't want to get my own way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's enough of that from outside.
Right. And I think like it's so easy, even with, you know, there's so many different ways you can get in your own way. And even, you know, the not being present thing, I think you're getting in your own way.
Yes.
Because I think there's a clarity that can happen when you're present of realizing where you started and where you are. And, you know, like, you know, it was funny because I did a TikTok that was kind of a play on it where it was the Lightning McQueen cars like screaming, and it was one of the little kid cars, and it showed a picture of me at Red Rocks, and it said, if 10-year-old me saw me now, and it was like the little car just like going crazy. And, you know, like I think for all of us, there's some past us, whether it's, you know, 10-year-old, 20-year-old, yesterday, that would be so proud and excited for where we are. And so I think this is going to sound, it could sound hippy dippy, but we almost owe it to that kid, our 10-year-old self, to just keep on doing the best. And I've, you know, throughout my career, I've set goals for myself, and I want to make sure that they're very attainable to where I'm at.
Yeah.
And when I was in college, I told myself, I said, by the time I'm 24, like when I turn 24, I want to be on a label gig. And by the time I turned 24, I was on two label gigs. And, you know, one of the goals that I've made for myself lately is by the time I'm 30, so I'm 28 now, I want to play on a number one song and just set myself up to be in that realm. It's one of those things where I think, you know, you owe it to where you've come from to keep on pushing to be better and keep on striving to be. I don't think I'll ever stop pushing to be the best version of me as a musician or as a person. Like, there's always things that I can improve upon. Mm-hmm. I'm never going to be perfect.
Yeah.
I'm never going to play, like, I might maybe play the perfect take once, but I'm going to have mess ups. I'm going to have hiccups, but that's just part of the journey. I remember talking to a friend, and we were talking about the music industry, and I was like, dude, I'm just so sick and tired of like these insane highs and these really lows.
Yeah.
And he was like, he's like, you ever seen a heart monitor? And I was like, yeah, what are you talking about? He's like, it goes like this. He's like, what happens if you go like this? And I was like,
you're dead.
You die. He's like,
that's life. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's like, those highs will always lead to a low, and the low will always lead to a high. Yeah. No one's always on a high. No one's always on a low.
It's never a linear path.
Yeah. Well, and that's anything in life, like that is just the same, is sterile and dead.
Yeah.
If that's how that is. That's, yeah. That's great wisdom.
And so, I mean, just knowing, I think it's also like, the way I keep on pushing forward and keep on being hungry is even when I'm in those lows and it really sucks, because we've all been there. It's those moments where you're like, all right, like, should I hang it up? Should I quit? And it snaps you back into, I don't know how long this low is going to be, but there's a high on the other end.
Yeah.
And just keep on chasing that, you know, knowing that it's just part of the journey. And some people's journey is hangs a little lower sometimes.
Yeah.
And I think one thing I've definitely dealt with over the last couple of years is the curse of highlights on Instagram and being like, oh man, that person's doing that and that person's doing that. And like, it's just a different journey. And it's okay. Like it's fine. Cause their journey is what makes them who they are and what is going to turn them into the musician that they are. And my journey is what's going to turn me into the musician that I am. And
yeah, 100%.
I might go through something different than they will. And that's going to shape my playing into a way that helps me later on down the road. Just like whatever they're going through is going to shape their playing and their career into what will transpire later on.
Yeah. It's important with social media, right? Important to remember, like we're only really seeing people's highlights. You
absolutely.
Know, that's not life.
Yeah.
I mean, no one's posting their lows really.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, that's, so you have to remember that.
I mean, there are some people.
Some people, yeah.
Yeah. They're a little bit more open than I am.
Yeah.
No, dude, I really appreciate it. That was such a beautiful answer to that question. I mean, I think, like you said, goal setting is important.
Absolutely.
Because if you have no path or goals, then you're just kind of floating.
You just got to keep on chasing.
Then it's easy to be like, oh, well, if then my benchmark is only playing Red Rocks, and then, well, how come I'm not playing Red Rocks this month?
I did.
You know, it's like, that's not
to bounce off that, I did tell myself when I was like 19, is I was like, if I ever play the Ryman, like I've made it. Like
yeah.
That is the one.
Yeah.
And like later in life, I'm like, that's a really easy one.
That's achievable.
that's a really, yeah. Maybe I should set it like a little bit higher.
Yeah, for sure.
Maybe like if I ever get a Grammy, like that's
there you go.
Bro.
Well, I'm still waiting on my Ryman gig, but yeah. I know what you're
I haven't had mine yet.
Okay, you haven't. Okay.
So, neither have I.
That'll probably be another cry.
Yeah.
I'll probably cry again.
Yeah. Man.
Yeah. I mean, it's for sure. And that's not to knock the Ryman. That is still the mother church.
Dude, my first Ryman show was when I was 7. I saw Michael McDonald.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Dude, holy shit balls. That's awesome.
Yeah. At 7, I didn't really understand the scope of what I was watching. Yeah. But yeah.
Honestly, I think I would lose my mind if I got to see Michael McDonald with the freaking
rad. Ride. And dude, like his drummer now, Dan Needham, is a beast.
Yeah.
Is a beast.
Go figure, his band is full of beasts.
Oh yeah. Yeah. They're all It's unfair. It really is.
Yeah. And you're Michael McDonald. You just
call whoever you want.
Yeah. And they'll be your band because like, you're Michael McDonald.
Be like, hey, do you want to play for Michael McDonald? No, I'd much rather do something else.
Yeah. Who's saying that? I want to know. I'm this guy that exists who's theoretical. I'm already mad at
who has turned down the Michael McDonald gig.
I don't want to play with Michael McDonald. Hey, shut up.
Dude,
play with Michael McDonald.
Not many other people, but they could pay me $5 to play with Michael McDonald. I'd be like, sure.
Bro.
Why not?
Yeah, why not?
I'll play for free.
Exactly, yeah,
you
yeah.
don't know me.
Dude, if and just because I'm such a Picaro fan.
Oh, dude.
Keep Forgetting. Just like if he went, keep forgetting, not in loving. Oh, dude.
Dude.
That 16th note, the... Because you know, have you seen the Picaro interview on that?
No.
Nope.
Darren, so... He talks about he got into the 16th note pattern and was like, I have made a mistake. Because he's like, I have to do this the whole entire song.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And in the second verse, he breaks a stick and you hear like the hi-hat stop and he grabs another stick and it comes back in. And it's like a big accent.
Huh. Whoa.
Yeah, it's a Musicians Institute interview. It's on YouTube.
Yep.
Oh, dude, I'm writing that down. Sweet. Right now. I don't want to forget to look that up after.
Dude, it's... I keep forgetting how you made that song. And there's so much, because he talks about that, and he talks about another one of my favorites, Jim Gordon, who played on a ton of stuff in L.A. in like the 70s and 80s.
Mm-hmm.
and was kind of part of the Wrecking Crew era, but not really. But dude, I could go on a rabbit hole about session history. It's bad.
We'll have to have you back. I would like to talk more about your home studio setup.
Yeah.
Maybe next time. But just quick, I mean, I saw your video in 2021, the Andrew Masters studio tour setup, right?
Yeah.
That was pretty cool.
It is not that studio anymore.
It's not that studio anymore.
Different house.
Different house altogether.
Different house altogether.
Yeah. But just kind of give us a brief overview of home studio life for you, what you're up to currently in there.
Yeah. So I have, you know, a full rig at my house. Do full 16 channels, and most of them are analog. So going through like 500 series pre's. But yeah, I do a lot of remote recording. Funny enough, the biggest songs I've played on have been recorded at my house.
Hell yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
How cool is that?
I haven't done like I've done like in-person sessions, but none of like the big songs I've played on were in person. Hmm. So, you know, like the Connor song and the Sam song were both at my spot.
Wow.
But yeah, dude, it's a lot of people find me through Instagram or just buddies here in town ask me to do demos or what have you. Oddly enough, like I started begrudgingly doing TikTok in like 2021.
Yep.
And what I would do is pirate. That's basically what it was. People's videos off of TikTok and then bounce them to WAV files and then save the video. And I would drop the WAV file into Pro Tools and then produce a full song around it.
Brilliant.
And so like throw bass on it, keys, guitar, drums, and post them. And the amount of people who've like hit me up off of that was more than I ever thought.
Dude, that's so cool.
So, yeah, I mean, like I had a dude hit me up once and I always, you know, text my clients and I'm like, hey, like if you want to come, like, you know, sit in and watch me play, like you're more than happy to. And he was like, where's your studio? And I was like, Nashville. And he's like, oh, I'm in Colorado. And I was like, oh, okay. I have a little that I was not expecting that. That's great.
Yeah. That's the internet for you, right?
Dude, it's, I still don't understand.
So do you track for people just around the world now or just?
Yeah. So I've
Nashville stuff or?
A lot. It's majority Nashville stuff.
Okay.
But I've done stuff for people in other countries and stuff like that.
And is that all kind of self-taught in terms of just, you know, engineering and mixing? And
so for recording, all that? When I went to Lipscomb, the cool thing about Lipscomb, when I was there was, a lot of schools, you know, you're either performance or you're production. My emphasis was in production, but I took classes in everything. So music business, production, performance, law, all of it. So I got a pretty hefty dose of like production, which I got really spoiled because we had, you know, the full UAD suite and all the, you know, Telefunkens and
dang.
And then I got out of school and all I had was a Focusrite and a couple 57s. And I was like,
yeah, that's where we all start.
Guess I'll make it work.
Yeah. So you're like, okay, I got to figure out how to make this work, which, you know, in hindsight, it goes back to what you were saying earlier about, you know, you have too many options sometimes.
Yeah.
And when you narrow it down, you're like, I got to be able to make do with what I got.
Yeah.
That's extremely valuable for recording, you know,
yeah,
to be able to do more with less.
Absolutely.
How do I make a drum set sound good with two mics, three mics?
For sure. And, you know, I've definitely, you know, recorded stuff where they want like a loop feel and all it is a snare mic, a kick mic and an overhead. And it's just like, this will get, and just, you know, crunch and stuff and trying to give them the best version of what they want and what the song requires. So yeah, but I've been very lucky to be able to build my studio and, you know, it's one of those things that I'm constantly adding to. I never understood the guitar player and the pedal thing until I started like buying studio gear.
Yeah, right.
I was like,
it's addicting.
This rabbit hole is never ending.
Yeah.
I'm going to be broke.
Yeah.
This is great. Yeah, it's, you're like, oh, I can never have enough options.
Give us just your favorite mic right now in your locker, your go-to.
I mean, 57s are always great. SM7s are always great. I have a KM84 that I really like. On snare drum, I have a 57 and an 84, and I blend them. And that's just snare top, and it sounds fantastic.
I've never done the two on a snare.
Yeah, do.
I've done top bottom. I've never done two on top.
Yeah, do.
Let me try that out.
Do a snare bottom and then two on top, and do a pencil condenser and a 57, or just a dynamic, whatever you.
And then is it sort of like parallel compression, or just you just like make one lower and one higher? You just blend it.
You're just blending. Yeah, it's not parallel. You just. Yeah. I've found the 57 is usually a lot more crack, and the 84 is a lot more body, and just kind of figuring out what your sweet spot is with those, and you know, it definitely like varies from song to song, and just trying to get the best sound possible. And you know, it goes back to that, the learning never stops.
Yeah,
just
especially
perpetual.
In audio.
Yeah,
probably more so than playing drums, right?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Is there one game every year where I drink a little more beer? It's over for it's over. We go there or they come here.
This should be fun as a Nashville native, because we always ask like Nashville, you know, specific questions.
Yeah.
Give us your favorite restaurant right now.
Oh, that's a really good question.
You can give top three.
Top three. See, here's the problem when you go with good Nashville restaurants.
Yep.
Is a lot of the ones that were my favorite no longer exist, because there were condos used to be.
Well, yeah. I mean, well, you can tell us those too. If you
Okay.
I'm curious of some of those names.
I always love Jack Brown's. Jack Brown's is great.
Yeah, went there for the first time.
The Greg Brady is money. The Greg Brady is a burger with mac and cheese and ruffles on it.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah, buddy. I haven't had that one yet. That's great. Okay.
Right across the street from the Jack Brown's in Edge Hill is a really great Italian spot. It's great for date nights. It's been there for forever. It's called Bella Napoli. It's really good.
That, yeah.
And then one that is no longer around, me and a buddy, when we were in college, tried to find the best wings in Nashville. And number one on that list is no longer around. It used to be over on Jefferson. It's called Knockout Wings. And it was, you got, I think it was like 8 wings, a side of fries, and 2 honey butter biscuits for like, and a drink for like $7.
Jeez.
Whoa.
Yeah.
But we're not talking hot chicken, right? We're talking...
Yeah, it's just wings.
Just good wings. Right?
Best hot chicken I will die on this hill is Prince's.
Dude, okay.
See, I trust you that's, as that, a native.
That's,
yeah.
That's
what a lot of people
don't,
say.
Don't come at me that. With the Hattie B's.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't even like I'm not the kind of person that gets it like scalding hot.
Okay.
But still, like I'll get like just a, like just
mild.
Just a mild, just yeah. pinch. But yeah, Prince's and then like Bolton's and Pepper Fire.
I still have never had Bolton's. I was told multiple, because I'm always saying this, I'm always like, and I'm not, this is not me bad mouthing.
But all you tourists, keep going to Hattie B's. It's great.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, sure. Stay in that line. Enjoy. Or be smart and go to the one in the nation.
The original.
Yeah. But whatever. Nothing wrong with Hattie's. It's good. But Prince's is just like, it's just clearly
what's
better.
The original?
Yeah. Prince's is awesome. 100% agree. In the last year, favorite purchase under $100.
Can I up it to $200?
You can.
We'll allow it because we like you.
Yeah.
So I was at a friend's house. I will not disclose his name because I don't want people asking for his gear.
Okay.
But I went to buy two 500 series Prees from him, like a Neve and a Day King, and paid great price for him. He asked me, he was like, hey, do you have, do you like collect vintage drums? And I was like, kind of, sort of. Like, I love playing vintage drums. He's like, come down to my basement, which was weird, but I was like, sure. And so he pulls out these like Enduro cases and opens it up and pulls out these Gretsch drums. And I started looking at the badges and realized they're like from the 50s. And it's a kit called the One Night Standard. And it was just a kick drum, a rack tom, and a snare drum. And that was it. And so someone had added a floor tom later on. And I was sitting there, I was like, okay, like how much you want? I thought for sure he was going to be like $3,500 or whatever.
Right.
He's like, how's $200 sound? And I was like,
there you go.
I was like, yep, mm-hmm, let's go.
Yep.
Yeah, and, that sounds great.
And so
let me think about it. Yeah, I think that's good. Yeah, yeah.
So I did some research, and they're from like the mid to late 50s.
Ooh.
Marine pearl.
Oh, nice.
It's some of them, like, they need a little bit of work, but I've had people be like, so like you gonna sell them? I'm like, no, I'm gonna play them.
Yeah,
they're gonna go into the studio rotation is what's gonna happen.
That's awesome, dude.
But yeah, dude, that's cool. My under $200.
That's a great response, great answer.
Yeah, we'll accept it. All right. Well, last question. Very fitting since it's the Nashville Drummers podcast and you're from Nashville. Just give us your favorite thing about this city that you love most and something that you, I'm not going to say you hate, but just something that maybe you wish was different or something that could be improved upon. And that could either be like, you could take that as the people here, the culture, or like physically, like infrastructure. I'm not going to go further.
And start with that. Let's end on.
Yeah, start with, yes, another positive. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
My one negative is just the traffic. I wish the traffic would go away. Because when I was a kid, you used to be able to get from Franklin to like Broadway in like 30 minutes.
Gone are the days.
But the positive, there are two things that kind of go hand in hand that make Nashville what Nashville is. And I think that's the people and just the history of the whole entire town. I'm a huge history buff, and everything that I think Nashville is so underrated on, all the stuff that has happened in this town. It blew my mind when I realized like Jimi Hendrix spent time here and recorded here.
Yeah. It's so easy to take that stuff for granted.
And
I was downtown last night. I was walking to get some food. I just walked by the Ryman. And I had that same thought. I was just like, holy shit. This is like, people travel to see this thing.
Dude, it was...
You know, we live here.
Yeah. You know, and I don't play on Broadway a ton, but I remember, because you know, my grandfather's been here since the 40s. And I remember being like, oh, yeah, I'm playing at Old Red. And he's like, that used to be this bank. I used to go cash my work checks there all the time. And I'm like, what? And, you know, like just when we used to have our conversations, just hearing about all the stuff that even since the 40s he had experienced in this town and, you know, working at Bell South and, you know, ice storms and all this stuff that happened throughout Nashville's history. And it was crazy because when I was 2 was the last time Nashville had like that major tornado in 98.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I was in the front yard at my grandma's house in Creve Hall when like that tornado went through.
Wow.
And so, and just crazy history. But more than that, I think what makes Nashville what Nashville is the people. There are some people that, you know, I think all three of us can attest to, like, our lives wouldn't be the same without the people of this town. And luckily enough, the people that we've gotten to meet through this profession, because, you know, we could all be sitting in a horrible job from 9 to 5 every day and hating it. But I think, you know, the people that we get to do this job with truly make it special, and this town special.
Yeah. Couldn't agree more. Well said.
Finally, where do you want people to find you?
You can find me probably best on Instagram. It's Luke Sumner 7, Sumner like the county if you live in Tennessee. And then Facebook, Luke Sumner Music, and TikTok, Luke Sumner Music. And then hopefully you hear me on the radio. I mean, the Sam Hunt song's at 36 right now, so.
Okay.
Bro.
Yeah, I will be rooting for you.
If it goes number one, I'm going to jump for joy. I'm going to cry again.
Dude, if it goes number one, I'm going to buy you some Princes.
It's on the record.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll take you out to Princes.
Okay.
Yeah. On us.
Yeah. Okay.
On the podcast.
I'll hold you to that.
Yeah.
All right, dude. So good to finally get you on here. And
dude, thanks for having me.
There's so much wisdom, I think, in your journey and what you've gone through. And I really think, I mean, you truly embody like not only the Nashville drummer, but just the professional drummer, you know, those mindsets. And it's no mystery that you've gotten to the places that you are, you know. So
thanks so much, man.
As soon as I get out here on the outskirts, I wish I was running by your house.
Something about a summer in the South Shore shines like gold down these old Round Bell River Valley.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Nashville Drummers Podcast. If you've enjoyed these podcasts, please consider supporting us on Patreon. For $5 a month, you can help support this dream and keep the ball rolling for us. Believe it or not, it's not free or even necessarily cheap for us to make this thing go. To sign up, go to patreon.com/Nashville Drummers Podcast or click the link in our Instagram bio. All of your help is greatly appreciated.
Check out our new website, NashvilleDrummersPodcast.com. And if you're not already following us on Instagram, you can follow us at Nashville Drummers Podcast.
This episode was recorded at Diamond Sound Studios, located in Nashville, Tennessee.
Thank you for listening, and we'll see you in the next episode.